This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. What? Two episodes in 1 week? That's right. Two episodes in 1 week. Thanks to Paul Stone, who joined us earlier this week. Bobby Carpenter, our guest on today's podcast. And I know we have a loyal listener. He's a big Indiana fan. I can already sense the tweet coming. How dare you not talk about Indiana yet? I have already confirmed Wes Reynolds will join us next week. We will get a deep dive on the Indiana Hoosiers. You're defending national champion, okay? Before you get all angry, I can already read the tweet right now. But yes, Bobby Carpenter, an in-depth breakdown on Ohio State, a team that lost, what, four players in the top 11 of the NFL draft, but expected to be right back in the thick of it, but an absolutely gauntlet of a schedule, including a non-conference game at Texas. They've got a game going up against Indiana on the road, USC on the road, Iowa, Oregon, Nebraska, Michigan. It is loaded this year for Ohio State, but I think there's no doubt they have the talent to run through that schedule well enough to make it to the college football playoff. So we will talk to Bobby Carpenter here in just a little bit. Also get some thoughts on USC from Bobby and a little thought on Clemson as well. So looking forward to that. You know, when we talked to Duck last week, we broke down the ACC with my buddy Joshua Nunn, did a fun, you know, breakdown there. And something that he and I and so many of us in the gambling space like to do is look at situational spots. And we ran through a handful of them in the ACC. So with Bobby coming on, I wanted to take a look at the top part of the Big Ten in the futures market. So the futures market right now at DraftKings for the Big Ten is Ohio State plus 180, Indiana plus 250, Oregon plus 260, USC 14-1, Michigan 15-1, Penn State 20-1. So I took those six teams and I wanted to look through their schedules and see, as bettors, what games can we circle as potential tricky spots. Now, we don't have lines out yet, but I've done this in the past couple of years just to kind of put it on the radar for those situational spots. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, just an incredible spot in the G5 was Memphis going on the road to Navy. Early season game, Memphis had just beaten Florida State, got their revenge against their former coach. Navy was off a bye, tricky, you know, offense to get ready for, and Navy won the game outright as a home underdog. So I'm not saying all these are perfect, but these were the spots that I thought from a situational standpoint jumped out to me a little bit. And we'll go in order of the odds. So Ohio State is your betting favorite in the Big Ten. Looking at their schedule, and I already talked about the challenges that it has. If we look at from October to the middle of November, a six-game stretch, I think there are a couple of spots. Now, I don't really love either one of them because Ohio State's at home at both. But with that being said, you're probably going to get a pretty elevated number. So October 3rd, Ohio State goes on the road to Kinnick to take on Iowa. October 17th, they go on the road to take on Indiana. I believe that's already been announced as a big noon kickoff. That's going to be one of the biggest college football games of the year. Rematch of last year's Big Ten championship game. Two teams that were undefeated in the regular season. Indiana, of course, went on to win the title. And in the middle, in that sandwich spot, you have a home game against Maryland. A Maryland team that, you know, brought back Malik Washington, you know, I think has a chance to maybe have some positive regression. There are some Bill Conley numbers that would point to some positive regression for Maryland. And look, Maryland's going to be an enormous underdog in that game. So could that be a little bit of a sleepy spot? The next one is November 14th against Northwestern. Once again, home, so don't like it as much, but Halloween, they go out to LA to take on USC. Then they're home to Oregon on the monster day that is November 7th, one of the best on paper regular season Saturdays, it looks like, in college football. I don't want to say history, but in a long, long time. And then they have the Northwestern the following week. So don't love it, but Northwestern the following week could be a little bit of a sleepy spot there for Ohio State. Let's go to Indiana. Now, I will say it does kind of feel like Cignetti, for the most part, is phenomenal at avoiding the letdowns. We've talked about him being the betting bully and dominating teams. Maybe we get some inflated lines this year, but hell, I felt like we got inflated lines last year. And for the most part, they were able to cover most games outside of the Iowa game, which we did have Iowa catching the points here on the podcast. I think October 31st is interesting, but once again, home game, don't love it. If it was in Minneapolis, I would really like this spot. But Indiana plays Ohio State on October 17th, at Michigan October 24th, and then comes home to play Minnesota prior to their bye week. Maybe a little bit of a letdown spot, but if you look historically for PJ Fleck, a guy that has not done all that well away from the friendly confines there in Minneapolis, but just one to circle. Once again, Indiana will be a big favorite in that spot. Oregon, I do like this spot in November. So Oregon has to go on the road to Ohio State November 7th, home to Michigan November 14th, and then, of course, they finish the season against their arch rival, Washington. Well, in the middle, what do they have to do? They have to travel to East Lansing to take on Michigan State. Now, Michigan State's a big unknown this year with Pat Fitzgerald coming in, but Pat Fitzgerald, historically, as we recall, in that home dog role is one that we like to back. So Michigan State at home, a lot of questions, no doubt, about Michigan State, and they might be answered by then and the depth might be depleted, but Michigan State at home on November 21st, taking on Oregon, after Oregon would have just played Ohio State and Michigan and having Washington on deck. So I do like that one a lot. November 21st, Oregon on the road at East Lansing to take on Michigan State in Michigan State's last home game of the season as well. USC, we know how much USC is not enjoyed. Just ask him, traveling in the Big Ten. You look at a couple of spots here, maybe a couple look-ahead spots at Rutgers the week before they play Oregon at home. That's September 19th, prior to playing Oregon on the 26th. How about going to Wisconsin, October 24th, the week before they host Ohio State? I could see Camp Randall being a challenging spot there for USC. Maybe we get a little bit of weather October 24th as well. And then the last one I'll note, a little bit of a sandwich spot. It will be the last regular season home game for USC. November 14th at Indiana. November 28th at UCLA, their arch rival. In the middle, Maryland heads to the Coliseum. So you get a big dog on the road there. Can't imagine that crowd is going to be very raucous. That could be kind of a weird, sleepy time slot. What's that game going to be? Maybe it's a late night game. So November 21st, Maryland. I think I like the at Wisconsin game a little bit better there for from a situational standpoint. Wisconsin at home, October 24th, probably going to be a pretty good crowd as it is at Camp Randall. All right, two more I want to hit on. One I really like. I'll leave that one for last. Michigan, year one under Kyle Whittingham. Decent spot to look at here, okay? October 17th, home to Penn State. October 24th, home to the defending champion, Indiana Hoosiers. November 7th, little bro, Michigan State. In the middle, a road trip to Piscataway to chop some wood in the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Halloween night, I don't know if it's a night game, Halloween at Rutgers, off of Penn State and Indiana, with Michigan State waiting on deck. Could be a very sleepy situational spot there for Kyle Whittingham in year number one. And the final one I wanted to point out that I really like, let's go to Penn State. Penn State, year one under Matt Campbell. Schedule's pretty ideal this year for the Nittany Lions. So Penn State this year, non-conference is a joke as it has been for many years. Marshall at Temple, Buffalo. Then they have their Big Ten home opener under Matt Campbell in Happy Valley against Wisconsin. Probably going to be a pretty good crowd, you would imagine, there. After that, they go on the road to Northwestern before taking on USC at home October 10th and going to Michigan. So a four-game stretch in the Big Ten of Wisconsin at home, at Northwestern, USC at home, at Michigan. Northwestern's going to be a Friday night game. And I want to point this out. Circle this one. Friday, October 2nd, Northwestern at home. It'll also be the opening of Ryan Field after the mega renovations. Remember, they've been playing on that practice field on Lake Michigan. It's beautiful to look at, crazy winds, but they are going to reopen Ryan Field, $862 million stadium, prime time, Friday night on Fox against Penn State. They will almost assuredly be a home underdog here in this spot. Northwestern's first two home games this year against South Dakota State and Colorado will be played at their practice facility. So when I look at the Penn State schedule, you get your home opener or your Big Ten home opener under Matt Campbell against Wisconsin, a very good chance. So Nittany Lions are 4-0 in the top 25, heading to Northwestern to take on the Purple Cats as road favorites as the Purple Cats reopen Ryan Field under the lights in prime time. And oh, by the way, if you're wondering what would have happened the week before, Northwestern probably is going to get their ass kicked by Indiana. So you have a good chance that Northwestern's coming off of a multiple touchdown loss against Indiana. Penn State could be 4-0, feeling pretty good about themselves, heading into a spot that should be a really good atmosphere. So situationally, of the six that I've pointed out, the one that jumps out to me the most, Friday, October 2nd, Northwestern home dog, more than likely, against Penn State. So I'll keep doing this. If you guys find any unique situational spots, let me know. CFBpod@vsin.com. But wanted to run through that a little bit here in the Big Ten. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by a gentleman who played in the Big Ten, Bobby Carpenter, former Ohio State linebacker, now member of the media, hosts a radio show in Columbus, also hosts on Sirius XM Channel 84. So when we come back, Bobby Carpenter will join us. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Continue here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Great to be joined by Bobby Carpenter, former Ohio State legend, and he joins us courtesy here on the podcast. Oh, explain to me the announcement on Wednesday. It has nothing to do with gambling, but I am curious. I know a lot of Ohio State folks are getting fired up about the jerseys. Something about the stripes. So give us a lowdown on what's the uni going to look like.
All right. Well, hold on. If you would have told me, I would have been more prepared. Give me 1 second. I'm gonna walk over to my office.
This is live podcasting. I did not properly prepare Bobby, who still lives in Columbus, and he is doing morning radio there, very involved still in the program. And
all right,
are we gonna get a live showing of a new uniform?
So here's the problem: is in 2005, that was the last year Ohio State wore these beautiful jerseys, and you see this, the gray sleeve right there.
Yeah.
All right, this was our jersey in 2005. It was the last year before they kind of changed over to the new material. They used to have these sweet metallic shiny pants, and then when they started going to like the dry fit microfiber stuff, they did away with those. My junior year was the last year we wore those, so we wore the new ones my senior year. So then here becomes the problem. They went to this piece of nonsense right here. And so it made me one. So like you see just the black and white, like it's the scarlet and gray. So there's no gray that appears anywhere on this uniform. So when you juxtapose it, like everybody got so mad and Nike was like, well, we can only fit one color on the sleeve. Like that was their excuse. And I'm like, what are we talking about? Like this is Nike. Like all of this stuff, it should be relatively easy to do. And for some reason they couldn't. And so it took 20, it's literally been 20 years. 2005 was the last time that the gray was worn on the sleeves consistently. And here was the thing that made people really mad. If you go look at the 2014 run, they actually put that on there for the bowl game, for the playoff games against Bama and against Oregon. And they call it the Heritage Stripe. So then that infuriated people even more because it's like they put a special on the menu that everybody loved. And then all of a sudden they discontinued it. They're like, why can't we just have that all the time? So 20 years, Kevin, the equipment manager over there, did a great job because people have been on him as if he's the one that decided it. He goes, I wouldn't even hear when it left. And everyone wants him to bring it back. So Kevin Reese did an awesome job. And he talked to me last year because he's like, we were going to get it back. He goes, it's in the process. He's like, they'll be back. It's more when than if. And so this finally happened. And now the process, and people are like, well, can we get the shiny pants back too? And they're like, well, they said the material. And I'm like, listen, that was 2004, Tim. I mean, we have people, you can take a luxury ride into space now. Like we have discretionary space rides for civilians, okay? This is not 2004 anymore. You can watch your phone on a plane and you complain if the Wi-Fi is buffering. So I think we can probably get this done.
So all that being said, we should just lock in an Ohio State future. If you look good, you play good, right? So the unis are back and Ohio State's winning the title.
That's the hope. We'll see. You know, I know that there's something that goes into, you know, roster construction and everything. And I know, Ryan, they had some injuries on the offensive line towards the end of spring ball. So they probably didn't feel quite as good coming out of it as they normally would have. But, you know, national championship, they're going to be in the mix. That's why I'll tell people every year. You know, and what's crazy, we had this conversation about Ohio State and when did the expectation become like win every single game? Because it wasn't always like that in college football. You know, my senior year, we went 10-2. We lost to Texas and Penn State by one score. Really good teams. Texas wins the national championship. We played Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl, and it was disappointing that we didn't win a national championship, but it wasn't like, you know, hide the scissors, you're going to slit your wrist time in Columbus, which like now, and Ryan jokes about it. It's like, what's this expectation? What are the standards at Ohio State? He goes, win every game, especially the last one, and then bring home a national championship. And it's almost like laughably unrealistic. And so when people ask, are we going to win it this year? It's like, listen, we'll be in the mix. They were in the mix last year. People like, lost two games to two teams that played for a national championship. And both of them were in theory, one possession games that could have swung either way. There were some big plays that happened that the opposition made and you didn't. And that's kind of how sports goes. You get yourself to that point and then you got to have guys step up and make plays. And to be honest, Tim, it takes a little bit of luck, man. I was part of four teams at Ohio State. Probably our third best of the four won the national championship. We were better my senior year and we were better my sophomore year. And both of those teams lost two games. And that's just the way it breaks sometimes.
You know, you look at the NFL draft and every year you're going to have a ton of Ohio State guys going. And this year's no different. You have three in the top seven. Tate goes four. Reese goes five. Stiles goes seven. Oh, by the way, my favorite defensive player in college football a year ago, Caleb Downs, goes 11. So every year there's going to be a ton of Buckeyes that go to the league. But it feels like it's never a rebuild. It's a reload. So looking at the four guys that left via the NFL in that top 11, Tate, Reese, Stiles, and Downs, three on the defensive side. Bobby, let's start defensively. How do they replace those three studs? Because I know that Stiles and Downs, everything I heard, and I'm just some jabroni, you know a lot more than I do, those guys were, you know, the heart and soul of that defense.
I think you piece together production because people always ask, how do you replace him? Like, well, when you have a guy who's been a multi-year starter, you don't just replace him. And now it's a little different in the transfer portal because of you can bring guys in who are started. And Earl Little Jr. came in. You know, he's going to probably take a lot of that Caleb Downs role, but he's a different player than Caleb too. And, you know, we'll see if he turns out to be better or worse, but he is different stylistically a little in how he plays. So what Matt Patricia does is he kind of pulls together the defense. He did this last year, and it's kind of an evolution, and you would see this happen in New England of who do we have and what are we good at? What can we do really well? And so that's why you start to see Arvell Reese on the edge and do some things like that. They'll probably have some of that stuff going this year. Sonny Styles and Caleb Downs, it's going to be replacing the communication and leadership. And the one thing I know that they'll have in a big way is Peyton Pierce played a lot last year as their third backer, rotated in, and both Sonny and Arvell spoke very glowingly about him. Really smart guy, really good linebacker. Maybe not like the 6'4 mutant like both of those guys are, but he's an NFL player. He's really good. And he's going to have to be the one that directs traffic. And then in the secondary, you know, whether it's Earl Little Jr., Jalen McClain, like those guys are going to have to direct traffic back there and make sure everybody's lined up. And so it's easier said than done sometimes. And this is where that portal comes in, which is good. You're getting guys who are ready-made players because they've played other places, but they've got to get integrated into your system. And so that's a lot of what spring ball and this summer install is all for, just continuing to rehash it. And for Sonny Stott or for Arvell Reese, it's going to probably maybe be a little more of committee. You know, they've got a young guy, TJ Alford, who's a really good player. He's done a good job, looked really good in the spring. They brought in Christian Allegro from Wisconsin. He's another tall, long body that they'll be able to have, where those guys will probably kind of be a little bit on, do some edge work, do some off the ball work, and kind of try to replace that Arvell Reese. But they'll package it and kind of figure out what those guys can do well.
You know, Bobby, last year I remember having you on, and you know, we talked about the quarterback battle, and there were a lot of quarterback battles a year ago. And this year, it feels like amongst most of the contending teams, those quarterback battles are afterthoughts, whether it be Ohio State with Julian Sain, you know, Notre Dame with CJ Carr, the list goes on and on. So where do you think Sain is at now? Because this time last year, you know, you were talking about Lincoln Kienholz, and he's legit and he has a chance to win this job. And that was what we heard out of camp. Sain wins it, keeps the job. So what type of leap do you expect from Julian Sain this year as a second year as a starter?
Number one, as far as Lincoln Kienholz down at Louisville with Brom, like, I love that fit for him. And he might pass for 3,500 and rush for 800 yards this year.
Like, let me jump in real quick, because we were talking about Louisville the other day, and he's a big unknown. But with Brom and his history of developing quarterbacks, and for him to go out and be like, this is the guy I want, you've seen him probably more than most. What should Louisville fans, bettors, expect from Kienholz week one when they play Ole Miss?
Well, he's probably, I haven't seen everybody, but I would say if you can find me four more athletic quarterbacks in the country, I'd be very impressed. And the kid was All-American, everything in high school, Gatorade Player of the Year, all those things. I mean, I'm watching him dunk from like a foot inside the foul line when he's in high school. Like, he's crazy. He's unbelievable. Like, he could, I told somebody, I don't know if he could start at Ohio State, but I go, he could probably start at 3/4 of the Big Ten schools at safety. Like, that's the type of athlete that he is. You know, but he also has a really good arm. And the problem, he just wasn't as developed coming in. Mm-hmm. And so there was really kind of two schools with this. And I think I talked about last year, Tim, a little bit, where you have Julian Sain, who is the 21st century curated quarterback, all the passing camps, all this, 7-on-7 all the time. And then you have Lincoln Kienholz, who's a three-sport athlete from, you know, Dakota, and, you know, playing almost nine-man football at times, you know, so it's, he was just more raw. So I said, like, he might have a higher potential upside than Julian Sain just with his raw physical ability. Now, Julian sees the field really well. The biggest thing for him was he's a young guy, and so he needed to develop himself physically. He continued to do that, put on another 10 to 15 pounds. And I think part of it, too, is your returning starter. And this is why Bill Parcells always liked to draft guys who had been two-year or more starters, because now you're returning, Tim, with expectations. Like, you were in New York last year for the Heisman Trophy. Like, don't tell me you weren't one of the best players. Now you have to return and play to that level and probably play even better than that. And so that's going to be, what are the elements that need to be added into your game? Like, he's a really fluid thrower of the ball, sees the field really well, gets it out of his hand. But now, can you incorporate that leadership element, and can you incorporate the use of your legs? And that's been something that they've talked about a lot, is you don't have to go out there and be Cam Newton. but we need you to be able to go out there and buy time and take 8 yards on a 3rd and 7 if it's there. And just understanding when to run, when to not to, how to buy time, and just evolving that way as a quarterback.
You know, when Ohio State won the title 2 years ago, it was, oh my God, this guy, Jeremiah Smith, has got 2 more years of eligibility. This is unfair. And now here we are, barring catastrophe, and I don't even want to put that out there into the world, this will be his final year of college football. Very well could be the number one or first non-quarterback drafted in the 27 draft class. What should we know about Jeremiah Smith? As you know him, I've heard clips of him. I've heard him give interviews. He seems like an insanely well-grounded young man, that he's not going to get too high. Because, look, the preview magazines, Bobby, are about to come out. Yeah. And Arch Manning's going to be on a lot of them. Jeremiah Smith's going to be on a lot of them. There's a lot of expectations. People are going to say that he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. What should we expect from Jeremiah Smith in year 3 at Ohio State?
A lot more of what you saw in year 1 and year 2. And I think they may even, they've talked about this too, as trying to get him the ball. And this was an emphasis with Cortez Hankton coming in from LSU. And just, yeah, it's great to throw 40-yard passes down the field, but you can also throw it to someone at 7 to 10 and have them run for 30 as well. And when you look at Jeremiah Smith and his physique and how he can could run with the ball after the catch, I think that that's something they're going to want to incorporate more into the offense. It's rare with Jeremiah too, because you said you've heard him, like, but you don't really hear a lot of him. Like, yeah. He's not a guy that's like posting on social media. He's not a guy
Big
that's
Big Ten Media Day, Bobby. That was the last time, honestly. Yeah. He was here in Vegas. Everyone, doing the rounds, gave some pretty good interviews. Nothing too outlandish, and then that's pretty much it.
Unless he's forced to speak, like, he's not somebody that just craves the media. Which, yeah, honestly, like, when you're drafting a receiver, it's like, give me that guy. Like, yeah, we have enough guys that, like the peacocks that need to always be out there, feathers up, me. Like, Jeremiah will block. And, he talked about even on the pick six against Miami, he's like, I needed to do a better job on that. Like, being able to get out there, get the block. Like, he embraces all that stuff. And he was doing a sit down, and he was down at the F1 race in Miami. And someone asked him what his dream car was. And he was like, a Lamborghini. And they're like, well, that's awesome. You're going to get it. When he's like, I already have it. I bought it. And people are like, oh my gosh. I'm like, well, the guy, let's not pretend like he makes, $100,000. I mean, the guy gets paid well. But I go, here's the best part about him, is if you went to watch him work out entering his freshman year and you went to watch him work out entering his junior year, there would be no discernible difference. And so the guy has had all this praise heaped on him, but he hasn't backed off at all. And that is the most impressive thing. Like, if he doesn't win the Biletnikoff this year, it's a damn crime, because he's probably been the best receiver 2 years in a row now in college football. And he was probably in the top 3 or 4 his freshman year as well.
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, I don't know if he put out, a tweet or something on Instagram, maybe the eyeball emoji. I know he wasn't pleased that Mekhi Lemon won the Biletnikoff. I hate it. It's overused, but is that motivation for him coming into this year?
I mean, he's one of those guys that wants to be the best. And
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I would say absolutely. If he would have won it, like, I don't think he gets lazy. But the fact that, you give it to Mekhi Lemon, and he had a great year, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if he took over games the way that Jeremiah Smith can. And really, you ask defensive coordinators, the way that he manipulates games and game plans around him. Because, like, in practice, he was getting in a fight this spring, and he was yelling at – I was over there, and he's yelling at James Laurinaitis, saying, all you guys do is double me every play. All you do is double me. I was like, dude, get used to it. Like, you don't think that they're going to run cloud cover. They're always going to have safety over the top on your side in the NFL. It'll be a spot shot where you're getting one-on-one coverage, because no coordinator on Monday night or Sunday night is going to say, man, Jeremiah Smith went out there and had 9 for 150 and 2 TDs, Tommy. They're going to do everything they can to stop you. And so he's been having to learn through that, work through that, and still finding a way to be successful.
So I think I saw a clip that you put out there from one of your shows talking about his odds to win the Heisman. Look, he is pound for pound, in my opinion, I think many people's opinion, the best player in college football. but that doesn't always equate to winning the Heisman Trophy. History tells us it's probably going to be a quarterback from one of the best teams. Last year was Fernando Mendoza. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but he won it. But 2 years ago, we had Travis Hunter. The COVID year was kind of funky with Mac Jones and Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith wins it. He had a little bit of punt returning out there. So when you look at the odds right now, Bobby, it's every quarterback you can imagine, and then somewhere in the middle, there's Jeremiah Smith. Right now, DraftKings has him with like the eighth shortest odds. Do you think Jeremiah Smith can win the Heisman? What's the route? Or does Julian Sayin kind of take away from his shine because he's the one throwing him the football?
It's interesting. I think, I want to say it was around 1,200 to 1 or plus 1,200 last time I saw it.
Around 13, 14 to 1.
Yeah, something like that. The reality is, it's a quarterback award. So the year that you've had Devonta Smith win it, outside of quarterbacks, you almost have to have the quarterbacks lose the race.
And
so you'd have to have, Arch not play well. And not that Julian wouldn't, but maybe the more spectacular plays, because it's easier to have some spectacular plays as a wide receiver as opposed to being just a pocket quarterback, unless you're running, getting hit. But you need those highlight reel plays. And I vote for the Heisman. And I always, before I did, I would always say this, when I was looking at trying to determine odds and find some sleepers preseason, it's okay, is this guy going to have, is he on a good enough team that he'll be able to have big game? We have the big opportunities to shine. Is he going to have the requisite stats? And then it comes down to the fact, you've got to be able to win a lot of games. And as much as we say that that shouldn't matter, outside of Colorado, all these players are on 10-plus win teams. They're all in consideration if they don't make the playoff and right there till the very end. So I think there's a shot. But, you start looking at, Darian Mentz at Miami. You could just rattle down the list of some of these different quarterbacks and – maybe all of them have average years. It's usually tough. I think Jeremiah will probably get to New York. I just don't know that he'll actually be able to win it as a wideout.
Well, you mentioned big games and this schedule this year. Holy smokes. We found out on Tuesday, no surprise, that Texas, Ohio State and Austin week two will be a primetime game at Iowa. We know that's never easy. Just ask Indiana a year ago. I thought Iowa probably should have won that game at Indiana. At USC, Oregon, at Nebraska, which is kind of in a funky spot in the schedule because it's right before the Michigan game, which we know how important that is. So very rarely do you ever see a win total posted for Ohio State that's not double digits, but it's 9.5 right now. Granted, the juice is to the over, so it is expected to go over. I have a hard time. Even with that schedule, it's hard for me to envision Ohio State losing three games, but man, that schedule, Bobby, is ruthless.
I think the last time it's been that low was maybe Urban's first year. I want to say it was maybe 8.5. And Ohio State was coming off, I think, a 6-7 year with Fickle.
Yeah, the Fickle year.
Coach. And that's why I say, you go look over the last 25 years, since 2002 on, there was the 6-6 year, 6-7 with Fick. We went 8-4 my junior year, but outside of that, they've won 10 games every single year. Now, sometimes the schedule's a little tougher than others, but it's not like they've ever just played cupcakes for 5 years in a row. Usually they have a big non-conference game in there, and the Big Ten conferences ebbed and flowed, but there's been some years where they're playing 3-4 ranked teams, and maybe not to this caliber, but I can't imagine them not winning 10. It just seems like such a foreign concept. And I know Indiana on the road, there's some games that should be really tough. Oregon at home, Michigan at home. But I think this is probably the most talented team, and if not in the top two or three in the country roster. And I think it's probably one of, if not the best coaching staffs you're going to find in the country. And so you put those two things together and you have a returning quarterback. Last year, you didn't have that. So you have that element. The defense maybe lost a little. Matt Patricia will clean that up. I know the juice is to the over, but I almost feel like that's a fool's bet, not to take.
Yeah, it's hard for me to envision three losses. Obviously, crazy things happen. It's college football. I wanted to move on, and I want to get a couple quick hitters before I let you run. But last year, I remember asking you about Matt Patricia. Hey, what do we know? This is kind of a weird hire. It ended up being a brilliant hire. Now they go back to the pro ranks. They bring in Arthur Smith. Pittsburgh fans are probably laughing. Pittsburgh Steeler fans are probably laughing. But he's a former NFL guy, certainly has had some success. What have you seen? What have you heard about Arthur Smith taking over as OC?
I liked Arthur Smith hire a lot. And when he got here, he reminded me that I was played beer pong in his garage when on my visit to North Carolina when he, I think, is a year ahead of me. And he was like good friends with my host. But I have a lot of respect for him. The guy, listen, you don't get head coaching jobs in the NFL if you don't know what you're doing. And so you have two coordinators that have both been NFL head coaches. And Arthur Smith, you know, people at Pittsburgh kind of lament that, but I challenge you this, like, how many weapons did you really have to work with in Pittsburgh? Like, you have better weapons, I think, on the Ohio State offense than you did with the Steelers last year. Now, they did some things to upgrade it right now, but it was not the case for them. And the one thing that Ohio State felt like was kind of lacking last year a little bit was some creativity in the running game. And they had that the year before with Chip Kelly, and it feels like they're bringing that back again. Just watching what Arthur Smith did in practice, how way they move, the shifts, the motions. I mean, it's an NFL offense, and a lot of times college defenses aren't really ready for all of that and all the adjustments. So I think you'll see an offense where there's a little more run after the catch. They'll still take some shots down the field, but they're going to be pretty creative in the running game and formationally as well.
All right, a couple quick hitters before I let you run, Bobby. USC, they're on Ohio State's schedule. They get them on Halloween, but look at the stretch from September 26th to November 14th for the Trojans. Oregon, Washington, at Penn State, at Wisconsin. And we know the history with Lincoln Riley and this USC team traveling two time zones is not pretty. Ohio State, at Indiana. What do we expect from this USC team? Because, look, they're in the news right now with the Notre Dame rivalry, whatnot. But Lincoln Riley's got to deliver in year five, or that seat's going to be pretty warm. It already is, I feel like, warm with a lot of alums. Do you expect a solid season with the Trojans with a really challenging schedule in the Big Ten this year?
So let me ask you this, Tim. We would consider USC a blue blood program. Yep. Yeah, I mean, they're up near the top in Heisman trophies, championships. They've had some down patches, but they've been pretty darn good. At what other blue blood program do you think Lincoln Riley would have survived the last 4 years? I mean, they're talking about firing Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. You know, yeah. Ryan Day, they were talking about getting rid of. I mean, do you think that would have flown at Texas, at Alabama, at Ohio State?
8-5, 7-6, 9-4, losing your bowl game? No, I don't think so. Yeah,
I mean, they would fire you, especially when you're getting paid that much. And now, you know, they're ponying up a lot of money for this roster. And he's talking about how their window is finally open. I'm like, you're at USC. Should the window ever be closed? You know, like it was crazy. So they've got a tough schedule. But we're talking about USC. I mean, for our era growing up, I mean, you're watching them out there, the spear right dead center in the Coliseum. You got Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, you know, Carson, all the guys out there that were so good for so long. Like, if they're not 10-2 and make the playoffs, like, the fact that we're now entering our third year of the 12-team playoff and USC and LSU haven't been in it is pretty crazy, you know? And USC has never made the playoff, correct?
Correct.
They've never made the play. I mean, we're talking over a decade of this. And if you would have told some of that in 2004, like, do you ever think there'd be a time where USC wasn't one of the best four teams for a decade and then one of the best 12 for another 2 years? Like, they'd laugh in your face. So the alums are fired up. I don't know that anyone else in LA really cares, and that's probably what's providing them cover.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And they got to figure out how to win coming across the country and be tough in those trenches. We'll see how it plays out. Win total 8.5 for USC. Final one for me with you. Another team, I wouldn't call them a blue blood, but certainly they were in the mix for a long time, won multiple national titles. But man, it just feels like, Bobby, Dabo and Clemson, time has kind of passed them by. And I kind of had a rant last week on this podcast about Dabo and him, you know, puffing out his chest to Greg McElroy about who they've beaten and then kind of complaining that Ohio State and Notre Dame and Texas spend all this money. That's the name of the game, man. And you had 9 pros last year. You had 3, 2 first rounders, 4 in the top 45. and you won 7 games. You had a returning quarterback. So, I mean, you know, it's funny. You look at it, they're a double-digit underdog, Bobby, week 1 on the road at LSU. And it's not like LSU's coming in with Joe Burrow. Like, they're going to be good. But, you know, I don't know if they're the top 5 team in the country. Is time past Clemson by? Where are we on this Clemson team? Win total 7.5, Bobby, for Clemson.
So here's the thing. You go look at the run of quarterbacks they had. Going back to even Boyd, Taj Boyd, who was pretty good. Then you have Watson. Then you have Trevor Lawrence. And then DJ was supposed to be the next guy. And we even watched him play pretty well against Notre Dame, remember? Up there at overtime. Like, looked good, but he never developed. And then it was supposed to be Cade Klubnik. He was the answer. 4 years. 4 years. And, like, they had 9 draft picks, and they were an average team last year. They had, like, the 2nd or 3rd most players drafted. Now, I understand that that doesn't comprise the whole roster, but, like, there's some talent there. And so what are they doing offensively? Like, Sammy Watkins and T. Higgins, they're not walking through that door again. And I think that that's where this gap has been, where, you know, they had these elite receivers. They had really good, great quarterback play. They were really good on the D-line. And then they would kind of piece together some things in other positions. And I know that Dabo, you know, was not in the portal, you know, didn't like NIL and all of this stuff. And I'm like, hey, listen, you don't have to like it, but you got to be able to deal with it. And I'm not saying, Dabo, you have to go out there and say, we're going to pay more than every player. If guys want to play for you, they'll give you a discount. Like, that's the reality. If they think you can get them to the NFL, you don't have to overpay. You can be close or maybe a little under, and people will say, okay, I believe in you, and you're going to get me the ultimate payday at the end of the year, and I like playing for you and those things. And it just seems like that's kind of gone. Like, I watched them play last year, and it didn't seem like they were there had guys popping off the screen anymore. You remember you used to watch, like, they'd have pros, like, legit.
Remember those D-lines?
Yes.
Remember those D-lines?
And, I mean, I watched him in 2016 just undress that Ohio State team in the Fiesta Bowl. And I'm like, I'm watching film. I'm like, these guys are damn good. I watch him now, and I'm like, man, they're not it. And they don't get the quarterback play to back it up. So I don't know if it's the coordinators. And, you know, you lose Brent Venables. That's a big deal. You've kind of cycled through now a couple OCs. Like, they've got to figure that thing out. And because if they don't get it done this year, like, if you're in the ACC and you're not winning that thing, like, you're sliding all the way out of relevance. And I feel like, you know, they could be on that Florida State slide if they don't get it together.
Yeah. All right. Before I let you run, favorite, I've called this year the year of the quarterback, Bobby. Favorite quarterback, remove your guy Julian Sayin. Quarterback that excites you the most. Who are you? Week 1, you will be locked in. I got to see this guy back on the field.
Oh, it's the guy who I think played so well last year, especially at the end of the season. And thankfully, they've got a great state judicial system there in Mississippi that granted him that extra year. I mean, that judge was like crying now, and you've got Lane Kiffin saying that Oxford's racist and everything else. You know, you've got a black quarterback coming from Michigan down here to play. It's got to be Trinidad Chambliss. Like, with how electric and how good he was in the playoff last year, despite all the noise going on. And then you look at who they're opening with, like, their early games. Yep. And then you look at week 3, you've got Lane coming back, buddy, to Oxford. Like, I don't think, listen, I'm always going to say the Ohio State Michigan game will be the best environment. No game is going to be better than that. I mean, that is some serious vitriol coming back to town. And then they got their quarterback back. So they've got a decent shot, I think, of winning that thing.
Oh, man. Week 1's going to be fun. Sunday night, you've got in Nashville, your guy Keenholz versus Chambliss. But I agree with you. There's going to be some awesome games. November 7th, look at that lineup. But, man, September 19th in Oxford, Ole Miss hosting LSU, primetime ABC. Won't get much better than that. Bobby, I kept you way over than I said I would keep you. Much appreciated, man, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
My pleasure, Tim. Anytime.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
That's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to Bobby Carpenter for joining us and giving us some thoughts on Ohio State, as well as a couple of other thoughts on USC, his favorite quarterback that he's most excited to watch Trinidad Chambliss as well as Clemson and where they're at as a program moving forward. Didn't dive into it too much. A lot coming out about the expansion of the college football playoff. You know, it's one of those tricky things here on this podcast where we're a gambling podcast. We want to look at the here and the now. Speculation on what's going to come doesn't really affect you and me as bettors, but we can get into it certainly a little bit later on in the summer as we get closer and closer to the inevitable expansion. It does feel like that's where the wind is blowing right now. The Big 12, the ACC, all on board, Notre Dame as well, of the expanded 2014 playoff. I think ESPN and the SEC a little bit hesitant right now. So we'll see how it all plays out. So once again, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Every episode up on YouTube as well, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. You can tweet me at @1TimMurray. You can email us, cfbpod@vsin.com. Thanks to our producers, as always, Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter. Thanks again to Bobby Carpenter. We'll be back next week. One, I don't know, maybe two episodes. We'll see. And just a reminder, Indiana fans, Wes Reynolds said he would jump on the podcast next week. So we will get the in-depth breakdown of the defending national champion, Indiana Hoosiers. All right. Until next week, this has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.